Hello and welcome to the S Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture topics beginning with the letter S. I'm Dominic Nguyen.
I'm Lita Cho.
I am Sung Lee.
And I am Stephen Carnes.
And today's topic is spies. Spies have gone up and down in popularity over the years. Of course, their biggest period was the 60s, but they're coming back up right now. So with the recent premiere of the third season of Chuck, I figure it's a good time to talk about it. Let's go ahead and talk about the usual thing, which is, what was your first like movie or TV spy that you saw? Or even book spies, because Harriet the Spy does count. Lita?
Okay, I didn't know I would go first. Actually, the first spy movie I can remember is GoldenEye with James Bond.
With Pierce Brosnan, James Bond. Pierce Brosnan. This is where I remember that you're way younger than us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Unless Power Rangers count as spies.
They do not. They count as Power Rangers.
That's what I first remember. I can't remember any kids movies. I'm sure there are, but I can't remember.
If Spy Kids was your first spy movie,
no.
I'm having you walk away right now.
No, it was not. But yeah, I remember having a good experience from that. I remember it as a good movie. I haven't watched it recently, so I can't really remember if it's good, you know, as an adult. But as a kid, I did enjoy it.
Okay. Sung, what was your first spy movie that you remember?
Well, it was probably... If you had to go with movies specifically, it would be the one I remember was Octopussy.
Nice. But what about, you know, anything
television
before that on television?
Series, it would have to be Get Smart.
Ah, good old Get Smart.
Oh, does Inspector Gadget count? No, he's an
Inspector Gadget. Inspector Gadget is basically Gadget. Get Smart, yes, in cartoon form, so I'm going to count that.
Yeah, so then Inspector Gadget was my very first spy moment.
Okay. I can deal with that, actually.
Yeah. I guess that Inspector Gadget would have to be one of my first
things. Awesome! You're right!
I mean, because
right
as
on.
A kid, you're watching cartoons mainly, and I was going to go with one of the early Bond films. I used to see them all the time on TV when I was young, but I guess Inspector Gadget takes the cake.
You can tell me something that isn't Inspector Gadget, by the way.
Oh.
But if you tell me ProStars, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Punching going on. Very violent.
it's because no one will bro fist. Kevin?
Kevin's playing an iPhone game right now.
Lita, will you?
Oh!
No, you're Kevin's blocking me now. Oh. But anyway, so what was your first Bond movie? Because I know you're going to be talking about that a lot then, Steve.
Yeah, it was probably Goldfinger. I can't remember.
Nice.
It was one of the early...
Goldfinger was that Connery Bond? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I remember Goldfinger is good.
I did see Octopussy, but I mean, I saw them all kind of jumbled.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for me to say exactly which one was the first.
The Bond movie marathons on TV, and you just kind of watch them. They all blur together as a kid, you know?
Wait, what was your favorite Bond? Is that a question? Is that a...
That may be a question for later.
It's a question for a little bit later. We'll go into that. There's going to be an entire James Bond segment.
Oh, I see. Sorry. I didn't mean to open it.
This whole time.
It's a big subtopic for us.
Yeah. Okay. So my first spy story is Get Smart, which I didn't realize was an actual parody of a real genre or anything like that. I just thought it was funny. You know, I just thought, it's like, oh, and they have funny little gadgets that don't work. And he has a shoe phone.
Yeah.
Shoe phones. That's awesome.
Which will come up again later. But
I always love the cone of silence.
We'll get into that later. But that was my first exposure to spies. So when I went into the James Bond stuff, I went, man, this stuff's way too serious for me. And, like, the one-liners are really cheesy and I don't like it. It was especially bad because one of my first Bonds was Lazenby Bond.
Oh, yeah, on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
And that one wasn't so much of the...
It's definitely more serious and not as, you know, rooted in all the gadgets and things like that.
And it didn't have Sean Connery's, you know, pure cool in it.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I was younger, I liked the Bond films that are generally not considered, you know, the best Bond films. The ones that have lots of action but don't necessarily make a whole lot of sense, like...
Those are the best Bond films. What are you talking about?
Yeah, You Only Live Twice, I think, was one of my favorites.
Bond films, by their very nature, don't make sense.
There's not supposed to make sense.
Some of them are kind of cool, though.
Some of them.
I mean, you know, the villains have some good plan, Thunderball and stuff like that.
But meanwhile, Moonraker? Come on. That plan is the worst plan.
Out there.
Yeah.
And out on the moon.
What is Moonraker's plan, guys?
He puts a laser on the moon, right? And he plans to... I don't even remember what he plans to do with it.
He's going to destroy the world, and he will move a select group of eugenically bred perfect humans off the planet, destroy the planet, and then they will go back to the planet and resettle it.
Oh, which was the one with the big laser then? Is that Diamonds Are Forever?
That's Diamonds Are
Forever. Okay, so I'm mixing up Moonraker and Diamonds Are Forever.
And GoldenEye and probably some other ones.
Oh, yes,
but that's really out there.
Well, GoldenEye was about the electronic pulse.
Oh, yeah, and also the is it the World Is Not Enough?
The World Is Not Enough is the guy who, the media guy, right?
No, that's Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's Tomorrow Never Dies.
See,
The World Is Not Enough is the one with the North Koreans and they also have the satellite that shoots things.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of satellite lasers, but we'll get into that later. We've talked about the different genres. You know, we've covered a lot of the different genres of spy. What's your favorite kind of spy? The sexy spy? The cool spy? The really incompetent spy for the comedy one? Or do you like, you know, the modern Bond, which is much more action-oriented? Like, which is your favorite kind of spy story?
Am I going first?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
you're to my left. You go first. It's the way these things work.
Spy story or spy?
Spy story or spy genre. I mean, James Bond covers all of those, you know?
I personally really like the quirky, humorous spy, but mixed in with the little good action, you know?
So you're more on, like, the Chuck/Get Smart kind of thing. Well, actually, more toward Chuck than Get Smart.
More towards Chuck. Like, very... the spy someone, like, it... Someone that, you know, relates to you. There's an average guy who just got into that kind of situation and then learns how to kick ass later. I don't know.
It's like how Chuck is basically the Spider-Man of spies.
Exactly. Exactly. And he's very witty with his, like, you know, one-liners. They're not really cheesy.
They're not cheesy James Bond one-liners?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you kind of like the comedy action ones.
Right, exactly.
All right.
Mine would have to be kind of part Pierce Brosnan, part Roger Moore.
So the cool action.
Yeah,
hero.
The cool, confident, but not as far as Pierce Brosnan was.
And definitely not as far as Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies, right?
Dude, no, he was awesome.
He was awesome, but
he was angry awesome. He was passionate about
your file.
he like destroyed glass windows when he found out.
That looked on his eyes when they break into the trailer. It's like wild eyes.
Exactly. I like that spy too. That's also comedy, isn't it though?
It really is. Actually.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, like, because Pierce Brosnan was way too nonchalant, I think.
He didn't have a personality very much.
He came
either.
Off as smarmy to me.
Yeah, yeah. He is very smarmy, but I mean, that's kind of what I liked about him. But then, like, Roger Moore was just too...
I never seen him
non-action-y for me. He was kind of boring to watch.
Okay, so you're definitely in the Bond camp.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve?
I'm kind of torn. I like Bond a lot, especially Sean Connery's Bond. Especially the original movies. You know, the mix of calm, serious. He's a killer, but also he can mix in the one-liners and things like that.
And they don't seem cheesy when he says them.
Yeah, and until later on, once the movies start getting a little sillier, like Diamonds Are Forever. But yeah. I like him. And the other side of the thing is I do like a little bit of comedy in there.
Right.
And that's one of my other favorite spy characters is actually Kate Archer from No One Lives Forever,
which is a great game.
A computer game released in 2001. Awesome game. And she is just perfect because she's the professional, calm, you know, go get 'em, but also has a sense of humor and she's she's beautiful.
That's awesome.
So for me, I actually am totally on the side of the comedy spy.
All right.
One of my favorite spy movies is a complete spoof and entirely random. It's Stephen Chow's From Beijing with Love, which is not a good movie. It's not a good movie at all.
Kevin
but
is shaking
I like
his
it.
Head here.
I don't know why I like it either.
Actually, probably like one of my favorite spy movies ever is the first Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
But only the first one.
Yeah.
I also
the third
Police
movie
Cop.
Had its moments. I
the third movie's moments were basically the first 3 minutes with all the guest stars, and that's pretty much the only thing I liked about the third movie.
Wait. Police Cop counts as a spy movie, right?
What does?
Police Cop? Kevin,
Police Cop?
Police Cops from yeah. Simpsons?
No, Police Cop. Police Story. Police Story.
Police Story. Jeez. Jackie Chan?
Yeah.
No, not really. That's a cop story.
A cop story, yeah.
Yeah. Police Cops. Police Cops.
Sorry, damn that Simpsons episode. Anyways, go on, sorry.
Please. Yeah. And yeah, what we're going to talk about next covers pretty much all three of those genres at once over its very long and storied franchise, which is James Bond. I mean, Woody Allen technically played James Bond in his version of Casino Royale, didn't he?
Oh, jeez.
Woody Allen?
Peter Sellers.
Wait,
was it Peter Sellers? I thought it was Woody Allen who did Casino Royale.
I don't think it's Woody Allen.
Woody Allen would have made...
Sure it's Peter Sellers.
It was...
The dialogue does not look that... What's not Woody Allen style?
Yeah, you're right.
Peter Sellers.
Yeah, it's Peter Sellers.
Don't doubt Kevin with the movies.
Woody Allen was in it as Jimmy Bond.
Oh.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah, so who is Jimmy Bond? What the hell?
I don't know.
Woody Allen was in it, so it's not as bad.
I saw that movie so long ago, I can't remember anything about it.
But yeah,
other than it was terrible.
Anyway, let's talk about James Bond, because he's just the spy. He's the defining spy of pop culture. He's still going strong. Well, I wouldn't know about strong after 40 years.
Inspired all sorts of spin-offs and other spy shows.
Yeah, I mean, he's been spoofed just as often as he's had his own movies. And so, yeah, let's talk about James Bond. Like, what about James Bond specifically, you know, within the spy genre, draws you to it, or in my case, repulses you from it?
I don't know. Like, I thought it was a lot of good action, like a lot of good explosions, a lot of, the directing in the action, it was not the greatest, but it was still like a fun movie, a good popcorn morning to see. Like, I knew I was always going to have a good time.
The one that I remember from that is the ski scene in A View to a Kill. That was pretty action-y, and I remembered that a lot as a kid, although that was also because my family surrounded me in Duran Duran, and they just kept showing me that scene.
And now James Bond is going in this different turn where it's like more serious and like...
But very action-y.
Basically, the way Ebert described it is that basically he's turned into an action hero.
Right.
Yeah.
And not a spy.
What is it? It's Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, right?
Well,
Quantum of Solace is where he really just became an action guy.
Yeah.
Action.
Casino Royale was...
I
liked Casino Royale
was still very much
a lot.
Spy.
Yeah, the story was now really interesting. It's no longer this like side thing where... I know that were like, you know, it was just floofy and like one-liners.
Yeah, because I mean,
and what do you know? It was actually based on one of Ian Fleming's original novels.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for bringing that novel to this table where our listeners can totally hear it.
Why, no problem.
I
if we had viewers, then you could actually show it to the camera, but we don't. So all I can do is describe the novel.
Look at this marvelous cover. Oh, you're missing so much. Go out and buy it.
I will say that like I like spy movies that are actual. Where they actually do spy stuff.
And there was a twist, which is pretty good.
I'm just going to mention Mission Impossible, the movies, not because they're good, but because they are very much about spies and espionage.
Really?
And stuff.
But they also make no sense when you step back
they
and look at them.
They make absolutely no sense.
Like, Mission Impossible 2, I just remember Face Mask. How many more face masks do you have?
That was a big problem with Mission Impossible 2.
It just doesn't make sense when you look back and go, why did he do that then?
I know.
Yeah, Mission Impossible 2 was a big mess, but I just like the espionage aspect of those movies.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like where James Bond is going now, where it's more of a serious story. I don't know about the latest film, but Casino Royale I thought was a very good, well-rounded action film with a good drama and a good story.
And character development.
A very good character development, right.
Vesper Lynd was really well fleshed out, more than your typical Bond girl.
All right.
That's true.
Yeah, well, but your typical Bond girl is just flesh, so there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, Sung, what about you? Or did you already talk about this? Like, what about the Bond series draws you in?
It's kind of similar to what Lita said. It's a guaranteed popcorn flick of, you know, you just go and you're entertained for 90 minutes. There's not really a guarantee you're going to be totally entertained, like the one that doesn't exist with Denise Richards.
Denise Richards is, in fact, the reason I stopped watching Bond movies.
Oh, no.
Which one was?
She was Christmas.
Oh, it's that one.
Yeah.
She was like a nuclear physicist.
She was a nuclear physicist. It was the worst casting.
Yes.
She was hot,
like,
whatever.
Nicolas Cage playing Luke Cage would be better casting than Denise Richards as a nuclear physicist.
And the most of the Timothy Dalton ones are pretty forgettable, too.
Living Daylights?
Kevin's asking you about the Living Daylights, and he's just shaking his head right now, son.
Was that the one where they write the cello case? That was a fun scene.
All right, Steve, what about you?
Yeah, what about you, Steve?
Well, our question kind of switched. It was kind of, we started off with what do you like about Bond, and then what do you like about the films, or are we still?
What do you like about Bond and the films?
Okay,
because Bond and the films these days are pretty much inseparable. I mean, you have the books, but I mean, out of all the people in the world, how many of them have read the Bond books versus the people who've seen the movies? You know,
that's something I could talk about later on if you want to get onto that. There are a lot of interesting differences. But as far as Bond goes, I was drawn to Bond because of Sean Connery mainly. All those early movies I saw, he was awesome. He was stylish. He knew how to dress. Knew his he was action oriented. Also, he could fight, and he was just this great spy who almost never failed at whatever he did. And he was up against all these compelling villains. Whether they be off on their own, like Goldfinger working by himself with, you know, Oddjob, or, you know, up against these great organizations like
Blofeld,
Spectre, and Ernst Stravro Blofeld. Yeah, it's the whole thing just was compelling, and you get these, you know, these great plots that he has to foil, and he does in the end, and it feels good.
Was he charming as well? No, or is that someone else?
Oh, yeah, that's
Sean Connery Bond is one of the most charming
Bonds. That's also like one of the other things that kind of draws me is that, you know, it's not just an action movie of like big explosions and people shooting guns or whatever. It's, you know, he has a big sense of style, and, you know, like one of his trademark things is, you know, the whole shaken not stirred martini drinking
thing.
Oh,
is that him? I didn't know that.
That's Wait, what?
Really sorry. I didn't watch James Bond until Pierce Brosnan. I'm ashamed. I watched The Rock, though.
They had it at Casino Royale, though.
Yeah. They did. Well,
you
like,
watched
I didn't know
Dwayne
who,
Johnson?
Like, I didn't know who, like, founded that term.
Oh, okay.
Like, who was the one who first said that?
Yeah.
I mean, they all say it, but I didn't know who was the first one.
And it's iconically James Bond.
Yes, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, for me, what repulses me about the James Bond movies, so I'm not going to contribute necessarily very much to the whole Bond thing, is that it, and this is going to sound hypocritical and weird coming from a guy who actually likes most comic book movies, not all of them though, but it's just, it reeks too much of boy fantasy to me, because it is really adolescent in its view of the world. It's like, here's this really cool guy, and he's being really cool, and then he gets the girl, and the girl's not that cool because she's just sort of there and hot, and she doesn't do anything. And then he's just going to, you know, he has all the best toys, and, you know, no one can stand up to him, blah,
blah,
blah.
And GoldenEye really played to that. I mean, like, there was that one scene where, I can't remember her name, but she just went like, you boys with toys. You know, and that's exactly what it was.
And that's the thing about it for me is that it's just, like, it's not that it feels immature to me. It just feels like it's pandering to someone that isn't me, you know? Like, it's just so the formula was so set. They really shook up the formula with Casino Royale and Quantum.
Right. Yeah.
But the formula was so set that you knew what you were going to get each movie. And while for most people it was like they were going to get a good popcorn flick, for me it was you were going to get this like extended 100-minute testosterone rage kind of thing, where it's just like he can't lose, he's Superman, but he's this dude, and then he'll have sex with anything that moves, which will be hot.
Well, that was they pushed it a bit to the extreme
with Brosnan, yeah,
where he was just so cavalier about everything, but at the very least he was interesting to watch. He was fun to watch. The problem I have with Quantum of Solace is they try to capture that same thing, where he's just so cavalier about everything, but the way what's his name?
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, Daniel Craig plays him. He's just apathetic, and he's just that's the way I see him. So it's like he just doesn't give a crap.
I didn't but yeah, feel
that's
that
because
way.
Vesper is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Quantum of Solace. Okay, that. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, for me, it's because it just feels like this outdated view of what people want. You know, it's for me, it still hasn't grown out of the '60s, and it's just this fantasy world where the '60s are just because you know it's also got a lot of its roots in the Cold War.
Yeah. Yes.
And
while Cold War stories are still interesting to me, while Cold War stories are interesting to me and stuff. Like every time I go back to Bond movies, they seem more and more dated to me. You know, they're born out of an era that I just can't understand anymore.
That's fair.
Which is funny because I like Doctor Strangelove, which is like the Cold War movie.
It's funny also because The Living Daylights, the Timothy Dalton one, doesn't he team up with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan? And it's like, they're great! Yeah! It's like, okay.
They're up against the Russians. They're so great. Yeah. And it's just this such a blinders on fantasy for me, you know.
Well, that's why they need to update it with like the new Casino Royale movies.
Those are the things that like drew me into the series. But now I actually have a greater appreciation for some of the more realistic or serious films, like On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where he finds a wife, you know, Diana Rigg, and
she gets shot at the end. Spoiler,
yeah, Casino Royale
and Casino Royale. Also, they're a little different than your typical
because,
Bond.
Because, from what I've heard about the new Casino Royale, where they actually, you know, flesh out the characters. They're not just, like, paper villains and, they're not just women who are there to have sex with him. You know, they're not just mustache-twirling villains or anything like that. It's much more, it seems like something more along the lines of what I'd watch. So maybe I should give the Bond series another chance with the Daniel Craig stuff.
So you haven't seen Casino Royale?
I have not yet.
Okay. Wow. Well, you could see that.
Casino Royale is actually a good movie.
Because the Bond movie that I last remember watching is The World's Not Enough. And that just...
That's not a good one.
And that one I just said, I'm done with this. Like, I've already been...
I'll say this. I don't hate it as much as other people do. And I thought it was a fun movie to watch, but him parasailing like on the ice on the glaciers was just
my gosh.
I don't even remember that part. You see, I'm blocking most of it out.
Was there a laser beam shooting down and cracking up?
No. That was him in that super speed car thing.
Oh, okay.
It was right after that scene where he basically. He drives off the cliff and then he grabs the parachute and he parasails down. Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that experience just so soured me on it, where it's like I've either outgrown this or it's just really stupid, and I stopped, and I stopped watching Bond movies. I haven't seen all of them, and after that, I didn't have any interest in seeing the rest.
You should see the new mature version, because they realize they can't do that anymore, and James Bond is now no longer perfect.
You may like Man with the Golden Gun.
That might make sense,
Well, okay, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but the concept itself is very interesting to me.
Where someone is actually a match for James Bond?
The
is
only
that,
good thing, yeah, it has Christopher Lee.
Well, yeah, it was basically him just trying to find someone that was his match.
Right.
And so he hunts down James Bond, and he basically has a duel with him.
The problem is, along the way, it's a bad movie.
Okay, I don't remember the whole Along the Way part.
So, oh, wow. But yeah, Christopher Lee is awesome as a villain in that movie. Okay. But everything else about the film, it's one of my less favorite
ones.
Well, in Casino Royale, it's about his first time being on field, and then you can see him being imperfect. Like, in the action scene, he's, like, fumbles a lot. He's, like, tripping over things, and he falls in love for real, and the woman actually has a personality. Oh my god!
What?
Yeah. Oh my.
That's amazing.
And some buried secrets.
Very bad secrets. Anyway, it's a good story. It's a well told story.
And that's why I really don't like Quantum of Solace, because they backtrack so much from the ground they made with Casino Royale.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Are we gonna move on from Bond, or are we gonna keep talking about Bond? What do you want?
Bond.
You want to talk more about Bond? All right. So let's talk about the Bond actors then, and what they brought to the movies. Okay. Because I mean, not everyone's, but the standard answer for who is your favorite Bond is Sean Connery. Because he defines James Bond. Yeah, basically, the only thing he was missing from James Bond is the Britishness.
Kevin's favorite Bond is someone else, actually.
The thing is that Sean Connery is the popular answer.
Right.
Because, you know, when people think of James Bond, they think of Sean Connery Bond because he is what every kid wanted to be.
He was the first Bond. Correct?
I'll say
he wasn't, was he?
Yes, he was the first Bond.
Okay. Yep.
From Dr. No.
You want to say something, so say it.
Technically, he's not the first Bond. There was a television movie for James Bond before, some other guy. But yeah, he's the first motion picture Bond.
Okay. For me, like, my iconic Bond is Roger Moore, just because that's the one I grew up with.
Right.
And what did Roger Moore bring to the role that other people have not?
Britishness.
Because
Sean Connery is Scottish. He is Scottish, right? Yeah, he is Scottish. Yeah. And then there's that one other guy who was in one movie. And then it was Roger Moore after that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh no, sorry. Then it was
Timothy Dalton.
No, Timothy Dalton was after.
Sean Connery came back after George Lazenby for one movie, Diamonds Are Forever. Then it was...
No. Diamonds Are Forever is the seventh Bond film. You're thinking of Never Say Never Again.
No. Oh,
which is an unofficial Bond.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, but he starred... Sean Connery was up through You Only Live Twice, then Her Majesty's Secret Service came after that with George Lazenby, and then... Sean Connery came back again for Diamonds Are Forever, and then we got Roger Moore in Live and Let Die.
So Roger Moore was the more...
Quick question. Was that Wing Song for that movie?
What?
Live and Let Die?
Yes.
McCartney?
Yeah, the McCartney. Yeah, like, yeah.
That's the theme song.
Yeah, Live and Let Die.
Anyways, back. That's pretty cool. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Some cool stuff.
Roger Moore brought the kind of nonchalant, cool British.
Yes.
I'm just thinking of
clean cut, refined, type.
I'm just thinking about Robin Hood Men in Tights right now, which is like, why would the people listen to you? Because unlike other Robin Hoods, I have an English accent. And so, you know, it's one of those things where such an iconically British character is
now played by a British person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I will say that I remember hearing that they actually wanted Pierce Brosnan at that point.
Yes, but he was committed to Remington Steele.
Remington Steele, yes.
I was gonna say Magnum PI. I also grew up on that's wrong for a fact.
And Remington Steele kind of was, well, it wasn't a spy movie; it was a PI movie.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember growing up on Remington Steele as well. I actually like that show.
All right, and then your acting.
Like I said, I like Sean Connery because he was the original. Roger Moore, I don't have a big problem with. Many people don't like him, but I think he's all right. He does bring more of that sophistication, a little more kind of smarminess also to it. Kind of self confident. You know, I'm mocking you, sort of type of thing. But from then on, no one has said anything about the later guys. George Lazenby was only in one. I mean, he got the wife who got killed.
Well, basically,
spoiler.
Roger Moore he himself wasn't very cartoony, but what surrounded him was very kind of outlandish and unreal. The Timothy Dalton ones were, they trying to tone it down more and try to make it a little bit more real, but it was a 90s realism, which wasn't very real.
The License to Kill was definitely grittier with the drug trafficking and stuff like that.
And then the Pierce Brosnan's ones was when they just went full out cartoony. Which, I mean, it was very fun. It just wasn't at all realistic.
Yeah, actually, but for me, Pierce Brosnan is the defining James Bond because, and I mean this in all seriousness, because he was the picture in GoldenEye, the game for the Nintendo 64. That was my big entry into the James Bond series. They're like, oh, you don't know James Bond? Here, I'll show you some of the tapes and such, because this was before DVDs had really caught on. And it's like, I don't like this stuff. Let's just go back to playing GoldenEye.
There's this one scene, it is in GoldenEye, I believe, that to me was just so iconic of the James Bond I knew, and while watching that movie, I didn't feel it until this one moment, which is where he's driving the tank through, I guess it's Moscow?
St. Petersburg,
right? And then he's driving it, and it's like whole car tank chase. And at one point, you know, he stands up and he just straightens his tie.
As opposed to the version of that scene they did for Crank where he stands up and falls off.
Crank, another great spy movie. No, I'm just kidding.
Wonderful, wonderful spy movie.
Yeah, but I mean, if you watch that scene, that is just so iconic of what James Bond is, just like his whole mess of like stuff he's created and just like stuff that's surrounding him, of like all these people shooting at him, and there's these tanks and there's cars and just everything, and he just takes the time to straighten his tie.
I think one of those moments for me was in Diamonds Are Forever, once he climbs on top of the elevator that's going up the casino, and he's like, you get this faraway shot of him kind of standing up there leaning on a railing with his leg, you know, crossed down below, very, you know, kind of suave pose, just going up the top of this elevator all the way to the top. Yeah.
All right, so, yeah.
Anyways, what were you saying?
But yeah, so do you think that the Bond movies are going in a good direction now from where they were?
I think they're going in a direction that's way better than where they were. So they're growing with their audience. They realize they can't do the whole cheesy thing anymore because, you know, movies are maturing a little bit more.
It is very much the trend now.
Yeah, it's very much the trend. They're following the trend.
They've always been trying to follow the trend. Like, the 90s movies were very much on trend for the 90s.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're just like... go ahead.
I think it's probably a cyclical thing, or, you know, some sort of pattern, in that if you look back across the Bond films, you'll get, you know, the goofy Bond films, and then suddenly some serious ones, they go back. So I view this as just one of those stages where they're grittier and more serious now, but I'm sure sometime in the future.
Back. But it'll be interesting to see like what movies were popular during that Bond era and see if they correlate somehow. Because like right now, like Batman Begins was really popular with the whole gritty thing, and I guess they're following suit with that, with the Quantum Solace and Casino Royale.
They mainly got it from the Bourne films.
The porn film.
Yeah, they really got. Well, then again, certain Bond films kind of border on porn, but
the Bourne films as well.
Thanks, Lita.
Yeah, whatever.
The porns. I think I know what to call this one now. It'll be called The Porn Supremacy. Actually, it'll be called Spies.
Oh, so Bourne is a spy film too.
Yes,
I totally forgot about that.
We can get to that later.
Okay, let's.
But yeah, it's that the action people who did the Bourne Identity films worked on Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, if I remember correctly.
Let's talk about the Bourne films. Go ahead.
Yeah, going to, we're going
to. Casino Royale, in my opinion, is definitely going in the right way. Right. I haven't actually seen Quantum of Solace, but I've yeah. not
it's that
heard
good.
I was sorely disappointed in Quantum of Solace.
It's just long. Like, if you had cut out a lot of the things, that it would have been paced better, and and then you could have gone through it a lot better, and I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But I felt like, when is this movie over? Oh my God.
Well, it's so much of it was just like, I just felt like he was trying to kill himself over and over and over again and just failing to do so.
Seriously.
just because he's a main character and he's James Bond and he can die. So he just like, because there's one point where like, you know, he's fighting this guy and he just shoves him out at the window of like a several story building. And you're like, how does he know that he can even survive that? And yet he does.
I don't think. Yeah. Okay. That's. He wants a death wish.
Yeah.
All right.
It's literally him on a death wish.
So let's move on to the movies that have spawned off of James Bond, all of the ones that spoof him, the major ones being the original Get Smart, and these days people think about the Austin Powers series a bit more, especially since the Steve Carell version of Get Smart wasn't so good.
We can mention, I think it was called The Avengers, not the comic book series.
The Avengers, with Emma Peel and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They made that movie that has
Sean Connery in it, playing someone who's actually Scottish. But
Uma Thurman and was it Ralph Fiennes? Was it someone else?
It was Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you know all the spinoffs. Like, do you think that they're still fun, or are they no fun at all if you don't have the sort of Bond frame of reference?
No, I watched Austin Powers first. I saw the James Bond film, but I didn't correlate them with the James Bond movies. I was a teenager, so I didn't think of that. But like when I saw the Austin Powers films, I thought they hold up on their own fairly well. Because
hold on. Austin Powers 1 holds up on its own pretty well.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Austin Powers 1, not the rest of the movie, sorry, the rest of this trilogy. But the first one I thought held up pretty well. Like, I mean, I'm sure I missed some jokes going in, but.
But on its own, it's still a pretty good comedy.
Yeah,
it's just a good movie in general.
Right. Yeah. And there was twists, the story was interesting enough, and
it
the
does
end,
have some Bond references.
Right. Yeah. It has a lot of Bond
references. The henchman who throws a shoe is Odd Job.
Honestly, who throws a shoe? It really hurt.
What was his name in the movie? In the
Random Austin Task.
Yeah, Random Task. instead of Odd Job, they call him Random Task.
Yeah.
And also like that the main villain is
Blofeld.
From Thunderbolt, was it?
Blofeld.
I can't remember
Blofeld
which movie
was in a couple of them.
Blofeld is in several. He's not seen. His face isn't seen in a couple of them. And then when he finally shows up in You Only Live Twice, he's what's his face? Donald Pleasance. And then he morphs into
Dr. Claw,
Telly Savalas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember Telly Savalas.
Honor Majesty's Secret Service, because you need a more action-oriented Blofeld in that movie. Then he morphs again in Diamonds Are Forever into someone who's not as good.
Oh, well.
And who played a good guy in one of the previous films who got killed. So it's like, wait a second. I recognize him. What's going on here?
So I guess Austin Powers pokes fun at like how some silly things are in the James Bond films, which is good.
Austin Powers is built on the silly things in the James Bond series.
Including gadgets.
Yeah, but I haven't watched Get Smart, so I can't comment on that.
Neither.
But I enjoy the first Austin Powers. The rest was a little too grotesque for me. Sorry.
Get Smart is great.
Get Smart is great. Get Smart is great not just because of how it, you know, turns the James Bond formula on its head by having an absolutely incompetent agent, a girl he can never get who is more competent than him, and, you know, his inability to lie his way out of a paper bag. Which is, like, one of the best three-part gags ever. You know, it's like, I've got the army on you. No, you don't. Would you believe the police? No. What about a guy on a horse with a toy badge? You know, that kind of thing. And just, like, that, you know, it was my introduction to the three-part joke.
Yeah.
It was just so much fun on its own, too, without the James Bond point of reference. And at least the TV series, even though it's dated, it doesn't make itself seem as dated as the other stuff to me, the James Bond stuff.
Yeah, and the gadgets, you know, they're like the ludicrousness of those gadgets. You know, I just like I mentioned
The Code of Silence.
The beginning is the Code of Silence, which is completely useless.
It is in fact worse than useless. It actively goes against what they're trying to do. You know, like if I remember right, the whole thing about the gag of the Code of Silence is it comes over them and it turns all of their words into words on the screen, yeah. Right? And it just gets cluttered and they can't see anything.
Yeah.
And nice. You know, that kind of thing is just that's the great kind of mixed visual and like physical gag, you know. And it's great. So it really disappoints me that the Get Smart movie didn't live up to that.
I still enjoyed the Get Smart
movie. It was enjoyable, movie. But it wasn't, I don't know, it didn't make it for me.
No, yeah, definitely not. And the Inspector Gadget movie was just, yeah.
Let's talk about the TV show, how good that was. How Penny was the competent hot chick.
Since this is the good thing, since Lita's a girl, she can say Penny is hot and she won't be a pedophile.
I didn't say Penny was hot. I said Penny was the competent hot chick in Get Smart. Like, they equate each other.
Okay.
Yeah. She represented that.
Yeah. 99. Yeah.
Whoever. I'm sorry. But yeah. But and the gadgets were also ridiculous, like a helicopter out of his hat. What does that mean?
Roller skate shoes, Google Gadget, expanding.
You know, a lot of times, I wish that my car had the telescoping wheels so I could just like
go over traffic.
I just drive over traffic.
I think everybody who remembers Inspector Gadget thinks that at least once in their lives. Where it's like, if I had the gadget car, then I could just get past all of this.
It's like a Toyota hatchback.
But yeah, I mean, in many ways, I enjoy the off-spawn of James Bond much more than I enjoy the James Bond movies themselves. And I don't know what that says about me, because I just like a lot of these movies that wouldn't have content if it wasn't for James Bond.
Oh yeah, the Naked Gun films.
Naked Gun.
The Naked Gun, they're kind of Bondy, I guess.
No, I mean, that's fair. You don't have to like the original in order to appreciate the spin-offs, you know?
Okay. I like that then.
Yeah.
And now we have the latest successor to the Bond legacy. Well, a lot of people would say the Bourne movies, but to us it's Chuck, which is the latest successor to the Bond legacy.
Yeah, Chuck. Bourne Supremacy like just gave me a headache. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's my problem with the Bourne movies is I can't watch them all the way through without getting a headache because of the shaky cam.
Yeah, I felt like I was going to barf, but Kevin was like, "Oh, it's great." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? You didn't feel like you want to barf?"
I will say that the Bourne Ultimatum, that's the second movie, right?
No, it's the Bourne Identity, the Bourne Supremacy, the Bourne Ultimatum. So
okay, the Bourne Supremacy. I remember watching that and I'm like, wait, isn't this X-Men 2? Just because like it's like very it's the same kind of twist, and isn't the same guy?
Sure.
As Stryker?
No.
It's not the same actor.
It's Brian Cox and David Strathairn are the two different people.
You're thinking of if you didn't hear Kevin, here's the. He's saying that you're confusing, Brian Cox and David Strathairn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they look similar? Because I could have sworn that they're the same person.
No.
Well,
Wait, is that guy, is Stryker in the Bourne series? Because
no,
I remember seeing him.
No.
When you say Stryker, I just think of punching Lita in the face because of Airplane. Stryker!
It is
a funny joke on Airplane.
I like Ultimatum the best out of all three of them. I just remember the story was really good, despite the shaking cam. Like, it was just all wrapped around really nicely.
My exposure to the Bourne movies comes through the Jimmy Kimmel Show, which is not the best way to get introduced to the Bourne movies at all.
Oh, you're thinking of Supremacy.
Yeah, he said Supremacy.
No, I thought he said Ultimatum.
So
Sung was right then in that Supremacy and X-Men 2.
You're talking about the scientist. I thought you were talking about the X-Men that runs the.
No.
Okay.
I was thinking 2, but then I realized I was thinking of X-Men 2, so I thought it was also the second movie. But it is the third movie. It's Ultimatum.
No, it's Supremacy.
Supremacy. Fine.
Yeah, they all sound the same.
It's the third Bourne movie.
Second Bourne movie.
No. I'm getting this right. It's the third Bourne movie
that you saw
that was very similar to me for the second X-Men movie.
Why?
Because it's the same kind of twist that Wolverine has in the second movie.
Oh.
To what Jason Bourne has in the third movie.
But that's still good formula.
It is that same guy though, right?
No, he's Brian in the Cox. Second. Yeah, he's in the second film.
The main villain in Ultimatum is David Strather, not Brian Cox.
No, no, I'm not talking about the main villain. I'm talking about...
The scientist. Yes,
yes, the scientist.
He's in the second one, but he's in Supremacy, though. He's not in Ultimatum.
This is a very... Common...
Let's not talk about this. Okay, I thought...
So we're moving on from the Bourne movies now. He's in
No. Before we move on, it's the Bourne movies, the one where they have the cool, like, driving scenes.
Chase with a Mini Cooper.
Mini Cooper, yeah, that was Identity. Awesome. That was awesome.
That is one of the...
No, shut up. You should... No, whatever. I like that Chase. It was good.
Did you hate the Italian Job too, Kevin?
No, I thought the Italian Job was good.
I thought they stole that scene from the Italian Job.
Yeah. Okay, the Italian Job was better, but still, I like Mini Coopers and I like that race scene.
Yeah, anyways, they have a chase in every Bond, or I mean, a Bourne film.
Yeah. Which they should add to the Bond films. More car chases.
Well, he has an iconic car, but I don't think they do very many car chases anymore.
I think they should.
Because they went with the parkour thing for the recent ones.
Parkour!
Why did you shout that?
Office.
Got it. Anyway, so
I'll have to get all the Bourne movies straight in my head because they're all confused now. Yeah. I'll just write it on the forums or somewhere.
Bourne 1, 2, or 3.
Well, no, because I can't remember which is like what happens in what movie. Because
you're right. He's been trained in a similar way, like Wolverine and Brian Cox. But Brian Cox is not the one that trained.
He sees him in the hospital. I remember.
Kevin, no one could hear you.
I just don't remember which film it's in.
All right, so that's fine. We'll do that later.
Let's talk about Chuck
because Lita's been sort of itching about it.
Yay! I love
it. And Amy, all the way from Tahoe, right now, is going, "Yeah, Chuck.
Chuck is awesome." That's all I have to say.
Because you know that is one of the more famous inheritors of the Bond legacy right now. But more in the line of Get Smart.
Yeah, actually, I wish it was more famous because it hasn't done well in the ratings.
I think also what Chuck is really good at is that there's always something going on in each episode. Like, this is more towards the second season than the first season, but the second season, it was just like, there's like seven plot. Kevin told me there'll be like a lot of plot twisters and things that incorporate to the overall story.
Yeah.
And there's always an action, there's always a fight scene in each episode, which is impressive for.
Yeah.
For a one-hour show? Yeah, one-hour show, yeah.
Well, then you have Leverage, on the other hand, which always has to have a fight scene in it because there's one guy who all he does is hit things.
That's true. Well,
but that's Leverage is kind of in the spy tradition, actually.
Casey's a pretty good character. He's not just a tough guy who... He's also funny. He's a straight man.
Adam Baldwin is awesome.
Yeah, he is a great character.
But yeah, so, Chuck... it sort of, to me, seems like, I've said this before, the Spider-Man of the spy genre,
right,
where he's just this guy, and the spy stuff is a separate identity that he has, and it keeps leaking into his main life and messing it up. And he doesn't necessarily like it, you know?
That's totally true. And the love story is also
It's very really Spider-Man-y.
Very Spider-Man-y. But it's funny how it switches. Like, first season, Chuck is going after her, and now the second season... I don't know.
In the second season, it's just plain complicated.
Yeah, it's really complicated. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and the thing about Chuck, and this is the reason I'm going to recommend it to you, Steve, is that it's got a very human element to it that you can really relate to, which is something very different from when you look at, James Bond, who is sort of the male ideal as he's presented in his movies, or Jason Bourne, who's like... who you would never want to be, And so the thing about that Chuck succeeds at is that it makes the spy story very personable.
Right.
He lives with his sister, he works at, what is it called?
It's the Bymore.
No, not the Bymore. Is it the Nerd Herd? As opposed to Geek Squad.
And they do have the Geek Squad folders. I was like, oh my God, it's authentic.
Thanks, Lita. For those of you who don't know, Lita actually used to be a member of the Geek Squad at Best Buy.
When I first saw it, I thought Chuck was my boss because he also went to Berkeley, not Stanford, and dropped out. And I was like, why are you here working at the Geek Squad? He also majored in computer science. So I was like,
but yeah, so like the Chuck is about a guy who stumbles upon being a spy by outside interference.
Yeah.
He's just this dude. Yeah. You find out later that he was actually Spoiler. He's a little bit more than a regular dude.
He's a spoiler.
His roommate was more than a regular dude, too, and that's what got him all into this.
Roommate's a jerk. No, I'm just kidding.
His roommate is a jerk.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, and the thing is that
his roommate's awesome.
It stays comedy the entire way. There are some serious moments, but it never forgets, you know, that it is fundamentally a comedy.
Well, yeah. I feel like the serious moments are not tacked on. They're very incorporated.
Some of them feel tacked on to me because they use such cheesy music.
Yo.
You remember that scene where he looks back in anger, and the music to that is "Don't Look Back in Anger"?
I didn't know.
It was so subtle.
I actually like the music choices of Chuck, though. Like Kevin.
Or that scene where they're smacking Chuck up, and they're playing "Smack My Chuck Up."
I think that's just trying to be funny.
Well, yeah, that's them. Like they're very, very, they're very literal and blunt with
the humor,
with their music, with their direction.
And like Kevin and I found like good music off of their soundtrack,
like Barracuda. Yeah.
Barracuda, don't diss Barracuda. Well, indie music,
like
the
I
National Snow Patrol.
I actually appreciate their music, but sometimes it just makes me slap my forehead.
Barracuda was funny when they were when they're fighting each other.
Yeah, I actually discovered Architects in Helsinki,
who
are not in the actual soundtrack, but
which is great because compared to you compare Chuck to Grey's Anatomy, where Grey's Anatomy, you know, a band is sold out when their music is used on Grey's
Seriously,
Anatomy.
Seriously, seriously, oh my gosh, poor Snow Patrol. No, that's so. What was the best Snow? What was it?
Spoon.
Not Spoon.
Ooh, the band.
Slow Club, sorry. They were a really good band. Anyways, go on, sorry.
But yeah, I mean, so Chuck, we're recording this before the premiere, but the premiere of Chuck is coming up, and what do you think is going to happen with it? Because, you know, they've gotten really advanced with what they're doing.
We'll see that Lita has not seen
all
of season 2.
Yeah, so we're trying to avoid spoilers.
Really, I mean, I have heard spoilers on what's happening in season 3. Although
I mean, they're bringing in Kristen Crook, and that doesn't seem good to me.
Yes.
Who's Kristen Crook?
Chun-Li.
Oh, man, for real? She can't even... She just looks pretty. She
doesn't even look that pretty.
Actually, I saw pictures of her in it, and she looks better.
She does look better than she did. Okay, that's
good. She looks better than she did in Chun-Li.
But can't she act?
No.
Can Yvonne Strahovski act?
Who?
No, yeah, she can.
Who? Yeah, she's all right.
You know, no, she totally you know, she. Well, yeah. I mean, people who watch
the Australian chick, right?
Yeah, yeah. People who just watch the show and don't know, she's actually totally Australian. She has a really thick Australian accent.
Yeah. But like the thing is, like she's really. Because there's moments where, like, you know, when Chuck and her have a serious moment, and she's about to cry, but she doesn't. I thought that was really clever. Like, like that brings a lot, like those subtle kind of moments bring
that's
a lot
true.
To the character.
But I will say that I saw this interview with Yvonne Strahovski, and they're saying, because since she's so Australian, yeah, so like, are there any words or something that you have problems with? And she mentioned a few words. And when I look back and watch this show, and whenever she has to say those words, she'll always make a little pause. Like, and girlfriend is one of them. She said in an interview that she has a real problem with saying girlfriend in an American accent. And the few times she has said it on the show, she always pauses right before she says it.
But that works within the context of the show, so yeah. It's all okay. It's all good.
And I don't know. I also really like Casey in the show. Like first I didn't like him at all, and then like his humor
well,
is getting more
is that,
incorporated.
The thing is that for me, Casey's great because he's kind of a parody of the old school of spy. You know,
yeah, he
because,
is.
Because so this is the thing about Casey. Casey's played by Adam Baldwin, Steve, who you may remember as Jane from Firefly.
Oh, he's Jane?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God, Lita.
You didn't know that, Lita?
No. Where did the beard go?
He shaved it. So wait,
he didn't really have a beard.
Lita, I have a question for you.
What?
Do you not recognize the host of Jeopardy anymore because he shaved his mustache?
Shut up, you guys. That's low blow.
I know. But still, so the thing is that he's like a consummate CIA agent from like the 80s and 90s.
He's more awesome now.
So the thing is that, you know,
he loves Ronald Reagan.
He loves Ronald Reagan.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he actually has framed pictures of Ronald Reagan in his apartment.
And when he breaks it, he's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr.
You know,
President.
His favorite car in the world is the Crown Victoria.
Ew, by the way, ew.
You know, like he always knows what to do. He's always, like, he's not very personable. but he knows exactly what to do on a mission. You know, he's perfectly competent. He always has to pick up after Chuck's messes and all that kind of thing.
And also, he's always the one that makes the hard decision. And even though no one wants to follow him, he's like, dude, that's what you're supposed to do. He's the logical version of...
Yeah, so he is, you know, the voice of the old spy in the show. And that's what makes the show great to me, is that it represents so much about the spy genre while being still so personable.
It basically covers all of the different types of spies you see.
Like Bryce Larkin is Sean Connery James Bond.
Well, no, he's
Bryce Larkin. Yeah,
he's more of the Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, you're right. He's more of the Pierce Brosnan.
No, wasn't that one guy who came in, the older guy who like
John Larriquette? Yes, that's true.
John Larriquette is more
the retired Sean Connery.
Or Roger Moore ish.
He's more
Roger Moore.
Okay.
And then they have like Yvonne Chekhovsky is more of the modern cool type spy, and she's very down to earth and whatever.
Then who's Casey? John Casey.
He's Felix
Leiter.
John Casey's more just a military action type.
He's more like an 80s kind of spy.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is sort of explicit with his worship of Ronald Reagan. So there you go. Like he's much more grounded in the American spy tradition, but he still incorporates elements of the James Bond character into him.
He's Harry Tasker.
He's Harry Tasker.
True Lies. Oh yeah, he is Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies, but without the family.
But I also think like he lightens up in the show. He's still the straight guy. He always messes with Chuck and like makes his life harder for his amusement. tells it like whatever.
Yeah, he's still human. That's the thing.
Yeah. And whenever like Chuck and Sarah like have like these bits, he always like puts a sly mark to end it with, and it's like, why do you have to say that? That's so insensitive. Because he's a jerk. He's a jerk. But he's a jerk that you like.
Just like Jane. Now doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah, that does.
No, it sounds neat. All the generations of spies on the show. And
right.
You get the different characters.
So. And then you get Spider-Man in Chuck form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you.
Spider-Man.
Oh, I get it now. I get what you're saying there, Kevin.
And if you watch it, it goes by really fast. Like, it just, like, this... Like, yeah. I watched the whole first disc in, like, a day.
The problem is that the first season is very obviously cut off by the strike. And
yes.
It's not fully developed.
Right.
And then the second season, when they fully develop it, it gets a lot better.
It's
in the
a lot
season.
Better.
So anyway, to Steve and all of the S-Words listeners, watch Chuck!
Save Chuck.
I'll tell you my experience with Chuck, which was Mike, who was just here earlier.
Still here. He's playing Dominion in the background.
He basically was raving about it, so I decided to watch it. The first episode is very well written and is very fun. I was like, okay, this
really?
Seems to have promise.
I didn't get hooked on the first episode.
I didn't get
well, no,
the first
I, okay,
either.
I didn't say I got hooked on it. I just thought it was a well written, very funny episode. I watched the second episode. I'm like, okay, this didn't live up to the first episode. Then I watched the third episode, which is the Tango episode.
The Tango,
and then I thought I just realized, okay, this show is brilliant.
No, let's talk about Chuck's room. Who have seen the old boy poster? No, just kidding.
Yeah, no, he has an old poster.
Yeah,
an
old boy poster.
Poster,
and like Kevin likes to look at his comic books on his desk.
Yeah,
whatever.
He has a Tron poster. He has Comic-Con paraphernalia.
Yeah, he has Comic-Con badges on his desk.
Yep.
And his girlfriend, supposed girlfriend, his cover, they met, they were at Comic-Con with the...
And she was in Leia costume with the gold bikini.
Anyway, there's a lot of the reason also why I like it is because there's a lot of nerdisms in there that are, cleverly hidden. They're not, like, obviously there.
Although some of the other nerdisms are very obviously there. And it's like oh... Like the entire Missile Command episode. I don't know if you've gotten there yet.
Yeah, no, I got in there.
That was an awesome episode.
That was awesome.
I didn't like it as much in my personal reckoning, but
well,
all the characters have a story, which is good. Like
for me, that just kind of harkened back to the days of what if playing a video game could save the world,
like the last Starfighter.
Yeah.
Or Futurama. Or Futurama.
And Rush is awesome.
War Games.
War Games.
War Games is when not playing games saves the world.
No. Tic-tac-toe. Tic-tac-toe saved the world.
Yep.
That's true.
Yep.
Okay, so watch Chuck. Give us some love. I mean, Yes, Kevin. Give it some love. I think it needs all the help it can get right now. There was, because Chuck has low ratings, and there was times where they're always close to being canceled, but somehow miraculously always saved. There's a lot of promotion going around, though.
Yeah, the great thing about Chuck is you're never bored with it because there's always the spy world, and then there's the real life. Well, and the real life is like the spy world, as much of a circus as that is, his real life is even more of a circus.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes they do badly at connecting the two.
Yeah.
But when it works, it really works.
Yeah.
It's true.
Like the premiere of the second episode I know it's one of my favorite moments, but it's also one of mine, which was what was the game they're playing?
At the beginning of
the second season?
Mike, at the beginning of the second season.
What game are they playing at the beginning of the second season?
Oh, Call of Duty 4.
Yeah. Call of Duty.
Yeah, they're playing Call of Duty, and there's this moment in the beginning of that episode where they're trying to explain their tactics for Call of Duty to play against, I think it was Larsmar people who are their competitors.
Just as far as I could remember, it was random people on the internet, but that Larsmart makes
no,
sense.
Yeah, no, it was Larsmart people. And then that actually comes up later in an actual spy situation for him. And it's just so brilliant how they merged the two together, and it's just so hilarious.
It's true.
It is very true. Apparently there's a better scene that Mike has told me was, or Kevin has mentioned, was The Room. I haven't gotten there yet, but...
The Tron poster.
Oh, you spoiled it! No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. You don't even know it's on the Tron poster, but it is important. Okay. But anyway, so, yeah, let's finish this off.
Okay.
We've talked about all flavors of spy from the 60s to modern times.
Right.
Let's talk about two of our favorite things. You get to choose one spy gadget and one spy villain that you really like.
Okay.
So...
Aww. Before...
One?
You can have honorable mentions.
Before... Before I say that, you guys should watch Chuck, which is going to be on Sunday at 10 p.m. No, I'm kidding. I was going to say one spy...
One gadget, one villain. Because we've already talked about our favorite spies, really.
Well, I guess one of my favorite gadget was... Does the watch do anything? I forgot.
The watch does a lot of things, depending.
Yeah. His watch does a million things.
Well,
do you want a James Bond watch? Would you like that?
Yeah, I would like the James Bond watch.
Isn't there one movie where his watch is a flamethrower, or is that a pen? The pen's been a bomb.
What, in Bond?
In Bond. What did he have that was a flamethrower, or was it a lighter?
It was in the newer Sean Connery when he came back, the Never Say Never Again. He had a pen rocket launcher.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I want the pen rocket launcher.
I remember a Pierce Brosnan one where he plays with the pen and it shoots something and it blows up or something like that.
I would like to take that.
In Q Branch or something?
Yeah. It was one of the Q scenes.
Okay, I'll take that rocket launcher and my favorite villain. I don't know. It's hard. Like, I haven't watched that many Bond films.
Teehee.
Hey. He's one of mine.
Teehee.
Yeah.
Teehee.
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 He actually goes
to... Yeah, come back to me. I'm
right,
not
sure.
Liking.
That's fine.
Sorry.
Sung?
For me, the ultimate gadget in pretty much any Bond film is the car.
Yes. The Aston Martin or the later one? I forget what
it is. I just like the way the
is
Aston Martin looks.
Is it a Mercedes in the later one, movies?
Is that an Audi?
He has an Audi.
No. The current movies, I think, have always been Aston Martins, haven't they?
They switched.
I don't know about
Tomorrow
the Casino Royale.
Why has it changed too? I thought it was an Audi or a Saab or something.
I thought the world is not enough.
I'm just looking this up right now. In the books, he had a Bentley. The classic is the Aston Martin.
DB5.
He had an Audi in Quantum of Solace and The Living Daylights. Really, The Living Daylights too?
Oh, that's right. He had a BMW in
Tomorrow Never Dies. And GoldenEye and The World Is Not Enough.
Oh, yeah, I remember the BMW in GoldenEye. That became the douchebag car.
he drove the motorcycle.
So you'd most like to have a car that with machine guns
yeah,
and missile launchers
and oil
slicks?
Yeah, the Aston Martin one.
I'd like the one with the
most. Or if The World Is Not Enough, Carl was not an Aston Martin, that car. Because even though that movie wasn't the greatest... That car had so many gadgets in it.
That's true. And that led directly into the XXX version of it, which is like, I want all of that in here. What about villains?
Villains.
What villain? Any villain that sticks out in your head?
I don't know. Christopher Lee definitely sticks out.
That one was Goldfinger?
You said? Man with the Golden Gun.
Man with Golden Gun.
I'd like to mention Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah. Christopher Walken is awesome.
Christopher Walken is always awesome.
Oh, it's a terrible performance. Are you kidding me? And what, Grace? Who was the Grace Jones?
Yeah, it was. I hate a View to a Kill.
View to a Kill, Christopher
Walken. Yeah, Grace Jones is the henchman woman.
Oh, yeah. She was big in the 80s.
Yes.
So I'd like to mention Dr. No for his line when he mentions the whole bunch of hot chicks to James Bond and says, yes, they are all very sexiful.
Which one is the one who said, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die?
Goldfinger.
That was Goldfinger. That was Christopher Lee.
No.
That was Golden Gun. I keep mixing those up.
Goldfinger.
Yeah. Who played Goldfinger?
Goldfinger. I think Kevin's going to take my place.
Here we go. I can look.
So, all right.
There are so many things I wanted to say all episode.
Gert Frobe.
Gert Frobe.
Ah, Gert.
There's also Octopussy.
All right.
I think you guys are forgetting the ball in Thunderball. No, I could also mention the two bumbling gay guys in Diamonds Are Forever. Those guys were awful, too.
Mr. Wint and Mr. Kid.
You're listing off the worst villains, though.
There are so many. That's because there are so many villains. Because I think the Bond franchise is one of the few film franchises
006
where
half,
more than half the
villain.
Films
are bad.
Oh, Sean Bean in 006? Yeah. I loved him. I love that.
Sean Bean is wonderful.
I didn't really like him in the movie.
You didn't like how
after
when he fought
Royals.
James Bond, he blew into the horn.
Keep moving, guys. Let's talk about favorite villains, not worst.
Let's go to this because the reason why I mentioned how many bad villains there are is because the majority of the Bond films are actually bad.
This is true. This is my opinion, but. This is also Kevin's opinion, but I probably think more of them are bad than he does. Because I throw a big blanket over most of them.
Can Mike Myers count as a villain to spy movies?
Yeah.
Not as Dr. Evil, but as just a villain to making movies
genre.
At all.
Well,
the first one
was good. That's the one I'm going to acknowledge.
Oh, fine.
You don't like the first
number
one,
Number two.
Do you?
I don't like any of them.
Number two?
Yes, number two.
Who does number two work
number two.
For?
Who does number two work for?
Number one.
Who's number one?
The urine.
You are number six. Sorry.
That's right, the prisoner.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a spy, right? In the original
He was an
series?
Ex-spy. And because he was an ex-spy, they sent him to the island.
Yeah. The village.
The village.
I have a question for you. Which one is the one where it opens with 006 getting killed? He's in a clown costume and he's carrying a golden egg?
Oh, 009. That's
009. I'm sorry.
Octopussy.
Actually, yeah. which villain was
the two twins going after him?
Was Ricardo Montalban?
Oh shoot!
Ricardo Montalban is a good villain.
No, he was a villain in one of them.
Shoot, I'm forgetting now too. No, I don't know if he was a villain, but I know he was in it. He was in one.
I don't remember Ricardo Montalban being in one of these.
Was he in a spy movie at all?
Internet.
I'm sure he was in a spy movie. He's Ricardo Montalban.
Maybe I'm just hallucinating. I'm thinking of Fantasy Island, but...
I'm going to look.
I can't believe you haven't been looking right now.
Yeah. Let's see. No, Gunsmoke doesn't count. Sarge, no. The Deserter, no.
I don't know how to spell his name.
It's spelled how it sounds.
Montalban.
He was in Montalban. Mission Impossible and I Spy, one episode each. Felony Squad. Oh. Do any of these ring a bell for you, Sung? Oh. Gunsmoke. I love the Gunsmoke villain.
How do you spell
villains.
His name?
Montalban.
Yeah, that's what I had earlier.
Did you write Ricardo properly?
Yeah. Oh, there we go. We got
it. The Deserter, Fireball Forward, The Face of Fear, Hawaii 5-0.
Ba, 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 ba.
That must be it.
Columbo?
Oh, the Money
I'm
Trap.
Here.
Or one of the later Planet of the Apes films.
How the West Was Won?
Oh, no.
Cannonball Run 2?
No, he was Naked Gun in Spy Kids.
Oh, yeah, he was the villain of the Naked Gun song. Is that what you're thinking
of? Oh, that's Naked Gun. I was thinking Naked Gun. Yes, I was thinking Naked Gun.
Okay, let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap this up. Okay, Steve.
All right.
You can list off a list if you want. I'm going to have just one each or so.
Teehee!
I've got a couple. So starting with gadgets. I I like Sung in the Car, the Aston Martin DB5, especially the one in Goldfinger, because it has all sorts of crap on it.
Yes, it does.
It has machine guns, bulletproof shield, revolving license plates, smoke screens, tire slashers, ejector seats, and oil jets. It's like the Spy Hunter car.
Is that what you ask for when you... when you go to a car dealership, Steve?
Was that the one that was remote controlled?
Remote control is Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, that was Pierce Brosnan. So that awesome car, lots of gadgets within it. And then I have to go also as one of my favorites is just as a staple, the poison-tipped knife shoe.
From Russia with Love.
Yep, from Russia with Love that Rosa Klebb uses. And it's just so quintessential, you know, spy. And also, it was awesome because, I don't know if any of you remember, but the Indiana Jones, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles or series.
I love Young Indiana Jones.
In some of the episodes, he was a spy during World War I working for the French. And they give him a knife shoe. It's just like, it's like awesome, except it never works properly. The knife keeps coming out at all the wrong times. So he's like walking down the street in Germany, you know, undercover, and the knife comes out. And he's like trying to get it back in. So it's like, just shows you how impractical it actually really is.
How would you like make a contraption to make the knife come out without it being like not hazardous? Like, you know?
Spring loading, and you have to like put your weight a certain way.
Yeah.
But that's still not that practical.
And don't forget how you have to use it. It's really weird. Yeah. And she uses, like, it comes out, and then she's just sort of, like, kind of jerks her foot forward, and the person's like, no! It's like you couldn't just walk away or jump or something.
All right, Steve.
All right. So those are my two. I've narrowed it down to those two main gadgets, although an honorable mention could be Scaramanga's golden gun.
Oh, yeah.
The man with the golden gun, how it's assembled and, you know, he can reassemble it and whatever. So villains. I've been torn by this one. So I'm going to go with two films and the villains in those.
Okay.
Start off with Thunderball. Thunderball has some great villains. It's one of the first where we actually see Ernst Stavro Blofeld and how he actually electrifies one of his dudes in a seat in his conference room.
Yeah.
I mean, that's was taken from, was used in Austin Powers.
That's right.
Austin Powers was pretty much directly taken out of Bond, so there you go. Bond. But especially Roger Moore Bond.
Especially Thunderball, a lot of it.
And it's straight from the book, too. That's actually in the Thunderball book.
All right. So,
was Thunderball the one with the acrobat ladies fight?
No. Thunderball is the nuclear missiles.
You're thinking of You Only Live Twice.
Okay. I don't know.
You're talking about the two chicks that are
lounging.
The
two chicks who are listening.
Bambi and Thumper.
Diamonds
Are Forever.
And cartwheels and fighting him. Like, what the hell is this fight scene?
They're awesome until they get into the pool, and then he easily just dunks them under the water, and he's done with them. It's like, forgot, and then
he actually had a good line right after that, too.
What was it?
I forgot it. No, I don't remember.
They ask him, have you found out where this guy is? And it's all... And he raises them up. Nope, not yet. Puts them back down again. So, okay, we got Blofeld. We also got Emilio Largo, Eye Patch Man, quintessential bad guy, Eye Patch, of course. And also, in my opinion, one of the best female Bond villains is Fiona Volupe.
Which one was she from?
She's also in Thunderball.
Okay.
She is a Spectre agent, and she actually is integral to this plot. She's beautiful. She seduces the pilot of the jet that they use to steal the bombs on. And when she gets with Bond, she uses her beauty to get him into bed and to catch him off guard. And she is also one of the few villainesses of the early films who are not converted to being good. By being with Bond, like in earlier films,
with
Bond
the healing power of his sex.
Yes, exactly. Like
that's
good old
kind
pussy
of a,
galore. Sleep with them and they'll be good.
A little bit of a sticking point with me in those movies. Yes,
but she is just hardcore. Very intelligent, very devious, and she bites the dust because her own plan backfires.
But which is the one with the tarot card reader?
That's Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die, where he tricks
solitaire.
Her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Solitaire.
All right.
But yeah, Fiona Volpe.
It was a tarot card because it was a lover card.
No, her name is Solitaire.
Okay. Fine, whatever.
And for my second film for great bad guys is has to be Live and Let Die because of all the collection of weird bad guys in that film. We've got Teehee, the guy with the claw arm.
Teehee. That plays with alligators.
Oh. Yep, he plays with alligators. Man. He has the claw arm because of the alligators. I just remembered another
one. What's up?
Well, no, I just remembered like the one iconic villain for when I was growing up was Jaws.
Okay. Jaws, all right, back to Steve.
Kill. So we got Teehee, we got Whisper, this big fat guy who just goes around and whispers like this. And Baron Samedi is this like witch doctor like guy who's like really tall, paint and everything.
Samedi and not Samedi?
Samedi.
It means Saturday.
Samedi, yeah, Baron Samedi. So, deep voice. And then, of course, Dr. Kananga / Mr. Big. Oh, spoiler. So, you get this collection of villains. In both of those movies, obviously, Thunderball is more serious villains, cooler villains. But Live and Let Die, I mean, the villains are just so standoutish, and there's enough of them. Whereas, like in other films, yeah, you have Jaws, but he's kind of the one henchman that stands out. Whereas in this film, there's a lot of them. So, that's... Those are my picks.
Yeah. For me, mine are going to be both out of Get Smart, actually, because Get Smart is my favorite spy thing of all, other than, I guess, Chuck. But my favorite villain is All of Chaos, because they're awesome. Because they're just so strange. Like, the Mr. Big is a midget. Do you remember that?
I don't remember much about that show at all, actually.
But anyway, yeah, there's that, and then... my favorite gadget is the Cone of Silence because of its perfect uselessness. Because it runs against what you actually want to get out of it, you know? And so I wouldn't want one of those in my home, but it would be fun to, you know, bust out at work and just make meetings useless.
I just remembered about how, like, the ridiculousness of the incognito spy and how they take it to extremes and how they have them dress up as random, like a tree or a mailbox.
Yeah.
And then so it's like everyone's all like Maxwell Smart just come up to like a mailbox and knock on it and the guy opens the door.
Yeah. All right. That is the S-Words podcast about spies. You can find us online at s-words-podcast.com. You can give us feedback about this episode at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. Where else can you find us, Kevin?
Twitter.com/s_words.
That's it. Good night, everybody.
You guys forgot to mention Sanchez.
Kate from Archer.
License to Kill.
Okay.
The worst Bond film.
Hello and welcome to the S-Words podcast, a roundtable discussion about...
Chuck! About Chuck!
That's
Chuck. Shuck.
About spies.